Blog Talk Radio.
Two-tiered justice system. As soon as the latest charges against former U.S. President Donald Trump were announced, Trumpist acolytes began making claims about a two-tiered justice system, ostensibly against Republicans. Such a claim can only be made by those who are blind, deaf, or dumb. They seemingly are blind to the many black and browns who have peopled the phenomenon known as mass incarceration for at least a half a century under the auspices of the war on drugs. They are deaf to the cries of the millions of families who have suffered the human costs of mass incarceration. And they are dumb to the many who suffered from solitary confinement that left them mentally ill from what the United Nations Special Rapporteur on International Human Rights and Torture, Juan Mendez, called torture. If these quasi-fascists had talked about a three-tier justice system, that would be one thing. That's because they ignored the immense suffering of generations. For indeed, they knew a two-tiered system already existed, but they chose to ignore it. They cry alligator tears for the wealthy or the class they serve. They could care less about the poor and those transphenom called the wretched of the earth. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet, and it is always wonderful to be here with you, live and in living color. Tonight's program is going to be very, very interesting for a lot of reasons. One is because, well, of course, we just left the month of August, which, of course, is observed as Black August. And, of course, there was a lot going on for that month in terms of resistance, in terms of focusing on our political prisoners, but also the issues of the prison system, the so-called law enforcement system. Well, there's a lot now that's really getting ready to start happening in a lot of different ways, and we're going to talk about that. But tonight's program is, again, going to focus on some very, very interesting things as we get ready for tomorrow's special Zoom meeting, which will be a two-hour session or hour-and-a-half session with Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy. Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy, who is that? Well, tomorrow we will talk with Pastor Gaddy, who at 13 years of age was enslaved. That's right, at 13 in the 1950s, not the 1980s. I mean, not the, you know, not the 1880s, but in the 1950s, he and hundreds of young Black males and females were sent to reform schools throughout the country, but specifically in the South, and were literally enslaved in the context of being forced into labor or forced to do labor. Now, of course, Juneteenth is a federal holiday, and we definitely should observe the fact that something did happen in 1865, emancipation in a way, meaning there was a form of freedom that our people were in fact given. We cannot dismiss that or take that away from them. But it was not what most think or choose to think or whatever you want to call it, meaning we were not freed. we were able to do certain things, yes, that's true. If you want to call that freedom, then yes, it happened. We could leave the plantation, at least in certain locations. We could marry. We could, do some other things, right? But this was not what we call full emancipation. And this is what the Recharge Genocide 21 is now dealing with and doing. Meaning, our Recharge 21 project is about full emancipation all across the board, mentally, physically, and spiritually. And so we are now going to better educate and edify our people about what this thing means in terms of emancipation. What does it mean to be free? What is liberation? These kinds of things. We have to break this stuff down now. So I want to thank all who have been supporting MWM over the years. I cannot tell you how heartfelt as we now close out 25 straight years of, I'm telling you, tremendous hard work, really. But now that we kind of gotten to this milestone, we do understand, some say, the importance of having to travel this road. Because fighting for freedom and obtaining it is not easy at all. And so anybody that thinks they're going to get in the struggle or get in the movement and think that, they're going to, have kind of a joyous time or whatever, they need to think twice. And it doesn't mean that it's all harsh or it's all bad. It just means that there's a lot of work that has to be done. Our people did a lot of work to be free to the degree that they were. You know, and so needless to say, for us to go to the next steps, it's going to take, a lot of stuff. And it has. We've lost a lot of people. There's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, which is why reparatory justice is a must. So we're going to talk more about that a little later on. But again, for tonight, we are going to talk with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. Chairman Fred Jr. just came back from Paris, France. But he's going to also talk to us about his annual street party that they do every year in Chicago on August the 30th. August the 30th marks the Earth Day of Chairman Fred Hampton, his father. And so this year, there has been an advancement in the context of Chicago now will be commemorating Fred Hampton Day every year on August the 30th. So Chairman Fred is going to give us an update on that as he comes in a little later on towards the end of the program. But to kind of kick, we are going to talk about something that's been going on here in Philly for quite a while. And we always deal with whatever updates there are, and there are some updates. We're talking about the 1985 bombing that took place here in Philadelphia. Now, very soon we're going to give you some information about our action plan in support of reparations for the survivors of Tulsa. The thing that has to be made very important is that not only should the survivors be compensated or made whole, but the entire city in terms of black folks, because surely at least some of them were in fact descendants of some of those who in fact were violated. And so this whole notion of reparations or reparatory justice, as we call it, we have to examine now how this needs to be applied in the 21st century. The initial Universal Declaration of Human Rights was, of course, drafted in 1948. So what the Recharge Genocide 21 is now going to begin bringing into our communities is what we need to bring to the United Nations in terms of how this needs to be interpreted today and what needs to happen in that regard. So again, this whole idea of, well, you know, the people that things happen to, they're not there now, so you can't really claim it. No, 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 no. We need to deal with that. And so we'll be introducing some ideas and concepts very soon to address some of the antiquated ideas and concepts about genocide and now bring it into the 21st century, which hence we charge Genocide 21. So again, the approach, the ideas, the applications that were, you know, kind of given over the past decades, that's fine. But again, we're in the 21st century, so some of this stuff needs to kind of be revamped and revitalized and put into a context of today. So again, we're going to talk more about that. But with that said, here in Philadelphia, a bomb was dropped in 1985. Wasn't that long ago. For some, it may seem long, but it really wasn't. But the fact is that 11 people died, five of them children. Now, I want to thank one of my sisters who we had a very good conversation with earlier, and she pointed out some things about the incident or the situation that had actually occurred with her being on the inside, having heard and observed certain things. Well, we understand that, and as I indicated and shall continue to convey, MWM, the We Charge Genocide 21 Project, is focusing on the issue of human rights violations. There are a lot of, you know, things in the Black community that people like, don't like about people, about groups, about this, about that. That goes without saying. I know from personal experience. But when you deal with the principles of the situation, then it gives you another type of intelligence and capability of dealing with certain things. So my point is, as we proceed to kind of bring forward information and other things pertaining to the 1985 bombing, because we have formed an independent commission. Now, here in Philadelphia, a commission was put in place after the bombing. And it, you know, consisted of some independent people, but it was still kind of, you know, the system that kind of orchestrated it. Even though the great Father Paul Washington made some things pretty clear, and a few others. But the point is to now have an independent forensic kind of examination of what happened in 1985. It behooves us to do so, and to do it, as my sister Keisha would say, thoroughly. we have to do that, and we will go into reasons as to why. This issue is not going to go away, and Black folks in Philly need to heal. But perhaps more importantly, the Moose family needs justice. And the Osage people in that area need justice. And so what we now need to do is to make sure that we are able to really examine this thing very, very closely. And so we shall. So in a few moments, we're going to go to our live line, and we are going to talk with a brother by the name of Abdul Muhammad, who coordinated a press conference along with Sister Ramona Africa and the Move family this past week. And we're going to talk with him about why that press conference was held, but also we're going to talk about, well, I'm going to let him and a sister talk about this issue of what the new kind of findings is as pertains to the Move bombing. And family, I want you all to really kind of, you know, chime in after we bring to you the information. But Brother Abdul Ali Muhammad is going to be joining us. He's a community activist, also a writer, and also Professor Lyra Montero is going to be joining us. And she is an anthropologist, an archaeologist, and she teaches history, American and African studies at Rutgers in Newark, New Jersey. And so we are going to be talking with both of them very, very shortly. I'm waiting for them to give me a signal that they are in queue, and then we are going to begin the dialogue. I'm going to give you a start too with a little history about what happened in 1985. Let me just say this. Brother Abdul, if you can hear me, you need to press 1. I cannot see you yet, so you need to press 1 so I can see that you are in queue. And then we will begin. Yeah, okay, there we go. All right, now I can see you. All right, family, so listen, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. And again, how can we think about a bomb being dropped in a community, an urban area? All black folks, for the most part, in that area. But now think, we're talking about C4, right? Now, for those who are not familiar with what C4 is, I can tell you that it is a military compound, and that puts it mildly. So it is known to, you know, in other words, they knew what it was going to do. And without going into a lot of the details right at this point, I will say this, that it is recorded that the fire, the police commissioner at that time, once the bomb was dropped and ignited and began to spread to other houses, it is recorded that the fire commissioner literally, the fire commissioner was told by the police commissioner, let the bunker burn, which meant for the fire people not to do anything, meaning don't put no water on that, on none of that, just let it burn. Okay, so I just wanted to give you that a little bit so that you can kind of get a better gist for those who don't know. And we're going to go more in detail as we proceed, because it's very important with what you hear about that you connect what we call the black dots. And with that, we are able to proceed. Because when we charge genocide, we make sure that the masses of our people are well-informed about what it is we're talking about and why. And, of course, you know, you are hopefully in the mindset to support. This government must provide ample remedies all across the board. And so, again, we say to you, get ready, family, because we're getting ready to really move forward in some other kinds of way. But for now, let's do this. Let's go to our live line, and let's welcome Brother Abdul Ali Muhammad to this segment of New Day Reparations and Liberation. And then we're going to bring in our sister. She'll be joining us in a few moments. Brother Abdul, how are you this evening?
Hey, I'm doing okay this evening. How are you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Before we bring in, is it Dr. Montero or Montero?
Dr. Montero.
Dr. Montero. Okay, got you. Mm-hmm. Okay, before we bring her in, could you just share with the family a little bit about you?
Sure. I'm from West Philly, grew up in West Philadelphia, born in Philly, and I am a writer. I write opinion pieces or commentary. I've written the most for the Philadelphia Inquirer over the years. I write for other publications as well. I organize. I'm one of the co-founders of a collective called the Black and Brown Workers Co-op, which did a lot of workers' rights organizing work over the past few years in Philly. We did some anti-displacement organizing. I've been organizing in different formations over the course of my adult life. So over 20 years now. in different spaces and and around different causes. Yeah.
Okay. So what inspired you to become a community activist?
I think that's been just something I felt needed to happen, right? I see things and I see the need for action. And so that's been always my, the way I will work, the way my mind works is I see something that I think is causing harm to community. And I oftentimes take action because I see there is a lack of action. And so I decide to organize to the best of my ability to try to respond to whatever the harm is. And I would say that the first time I started organizing was about, the war that we were waging at the time in Afghanistan. And this is slightly before we began the war in Iraq. But I was in high school at the time, and I knew that was an unjust war. And so mm-hmm. I started seeking out spaces where people were organizing actively to disrupt that war. So, yeah, that's kind of how it began. And over the years, been in different groups and formations and coalitions, about how do we get free and how do we ensure that the systems don't kill us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, right. I get it. Well, I'm glad you heard the call and answered because this mm-hmm. is what we definitely need. And certainly in this day and age, we need folks that are focused because there's so much distraction going on now. And in that distraction, misdirection. So mm-hmm. again, I thank you for, being focused. And of course, with this issue that we're going to talk about tonight, surely that gives an indication of just, being able to see the necessity to, of course, act accordingly. So again, really appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's do this. I do see Dr. Montero in queue. Let's bring her in now. And we do have Professor Montero with us. Greetings to you, Professor. How are you this evening?
I'm doing okay. Thank you. How are you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I always say, as long as we can get up and do this work and see some victories ahead, it's going to always be a good day.
Yes.
So before we go into talking again about the press conference and what it entailed and why, please tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I think one of the things that's important to say is that I'm not a Philadelphian. I'm a New Yorker, but originally from the West Coast, from Washington State. And so for me, coming into this work that I've been doing with Abdul Alif for the last year and a half or so has been, very much learning a lot, right, about mm-hmm. the impact of this history locally. That said, my research for my PhD at Brown University focused on histories of racial science in Philadelphia. And mm-hmm. I got a really strong sense through that work and through that research, some of which I did, I spent a year at the University of Pennsylvania after I got my PhD, continuing that research. I'm really getting a sense of how race operates in the city of Philadelphia, how that's very mm-hmm. different than some other contexts, and how much that's really tied to, something that often gets repeated about the city, about it being a city of medicine, right? Okay. And in reality, that also meant a city of racial science, mm-hmm. a city of developing and laying the groundwork for eugenics, for all of the horrible genocides of the 20th century and coming forward, right? And mm-hmm. so much of that actually really can be traced right back to Philadelphia. And another straight line that I have come to see from from that moment that I've studied with people like Samuel George Morton, who collected about 1,000 skulls of people from around the world and from Philadelphia in order to measure them to try and prove, of course, the superiority of white people and the inferiority of other races, particularly, of course, people of African descent in defense of slavery. That collection of skulls is still at the Penn Museum. And kind of, you know, coming into talking about this press conference, that's really how I ended up getting coming into this work, was through my own work around histories of racial science in Philadelphia, as well as my own work around archaeological ethics and museum ethics.
Okay, wonderful. All right. Okay, we still have you, right? Uh-oh.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute. No, I'm not hearing her.
Oh, I'm here too.
Oh, okay. I'm just checking. Cause, yep. And this is Haley. Just in case, because, you know, when you're doing these kinds of conversations, anything can happen. So I just want to give people a heads up. We normally don't have problems, but every now and then, depending on the conversation, you know, something can go awry. So usually we're able to, you know, figure it out and get back in. But I just want people to know, if that should happen, just stay there, because a lot of times we're able to figure it out and get back on. So yeah, that's the sidebar. Okay, so now let's go to the press conference. Tell us about that and why.
Yeah, I mean, Lyra and I, and, you know, MOVE Elders held a press conference in front of Penn Museum, which is around 34th and Spruce in Philadelphia, in West Philly. And that press conference was held on Thursday, the 31st. And the reason and the purpose of that press conference was to talk about new information that we have pertaining to the revelation in 2021 that a Penn Museum curator held the remains of both Katrisha and Delisha Africa. And in 2021, there were, you know, two stories that broke that news, and one of those stories I drafted and did work on for the Philadelphia Inquirer to talk about the retention of the remains and the use of Katrisha's remains in an online teaching video for Coursera, and it was organized by Princeton University. So the purpose was to talk about the new information.
Okay. All right. So, and so again, I want to thank Sister Janet and Janine for, you know, making sure that we could connect with you, both of you actually, and thank you also, Brother Abdul, for making sure that we could connect with Dr. Montero. So,
you're welcome.
Now, tell us about what some of the findings are. Why you felt the need to have this press conference?
Yeah, Lyra, do you want to talk about some of the new information?
Sure. So when this really horrifying news came to light in 2021, there was a lot of evidence in 2021 and increasingly, you know, in the time that followed, about what exactly had happened here, right? That this was a situation in which the city of Philadelphia's medical examiner's office had basically given the remains of MOVE children who died in the bombing to a curator at the Penn Museum, which is horrifying and, you know, on all kinds of levels, of course. But at the time, there was far more evidence of in connection with one child than in connection with the other child. And so Tree or Katrisha's remains were the ones that the Penn Museum acknowledged that they had, the only ones. Those are the ones that were actually in the Coursera video that Princeton published for, you know, people to view online. So those are the only remains that the museum admitted to. Those are the only remains that the curator, Janet Monge, admitted to having. And even though we had a lot of other evidence from eyewitnesses, from x-rays that were taken at the museum itself in 2018, which were labeled to indicate that they belonged to Delisha Africa, with the codes that the forensic pathologists had used in the 80s, the museum and Janet Monge denied that they had Delisha's remains. And the reason why it felt necessary to have the press conference now is that some new photographs have come to light that are from 2014 and taken at the Penn Museum, which clearly show not only Patricia's remains, but also Delisha's remains on display for a public event, which and with Janet Monge, the curator, you know, clearly telling a story to or presenting them to just members of the general public who are at that event.
Okay. So essentially what you're saying or what's being said is they kind of gave some half-truths, or if not half-truths, some partial truth. And with that, only conveyed some of the information or a part of the information. Would I be correct in saying that?
Yes, I think so. I mean, both part of the information and only some of the remains, right? Specifically, there were three bones of Catricia's that were in the video, whereas we know that there were actually four at the museum, and one of them had never been returned. And, you know, the attorneys who documented exactly what was returned to move documented only those three bones that had been in the video, never that fourth bone, for example. So it's about half truth, and it's also about half returning, right? They also completely denied that they had Delisha's remains, which now that we have photographic evidence that they did, perhaps this will, you know, perhaps they will now produce those as well, in the same way that they produced the remains of Catricia that were visible in the Coursera videos.
Okay. So, and family, I'm hoping that all of you are paying real close attention to this. We're going to dive in a little deeper as we proceed, but this is kind of the surface stuff. And again, I like to do it like this because sometimes our people don't necessarily believe certain things. People have a tendency to try to imply that there's a conspiracy theory or some other stuff to kind of sway you away from truth. So I'm glad that we're able to kind of, you know, take our time and really examine, you know, the various components here, because we want to, you know, make sure that folks that are listening and people that you talk to, family, because, again, we don't provide information just for, you know, it's not about entertainment, okay? That's why we do this program late at night. That way people have the opportunity to do whatever they need to do all day, put the children to sleep or what have you. And then, again, you know, we know that most folks that are up this kind of, that time of night, they're serious about some stuff. So again, we're bringing it to you so that you can have ample information that you also will share with others. Okay, that's the point. We're action-oriented. So let's go back to our guest. So Dr. Monteiro, what's the next step? Now that we know this part of it, and again, we're going to go in a little deeper because I definitely have some questions, and I'm sure some of our family listeners have some questions, but what are we looking at in terms of next steps? Are you able to share any of that with us?
Well, I mean, I think that here's another one of these things where, you know, there's what should happen, right? And what is actually likely impossible to happen, right? This photograph that we found, actually there's a few photographs, but that were published by the museum themselves, actually on a public website of the museum, or, you know, a public account of the museum. So it's quite remarkable. They never found it themselves. or maybe they didn't think it was important. But what should happen is that, you know, now that it's very clear and undeniably clear that these remains, that far more than just the three bones of Katricia that were returned, were at the Penn Museum, that means that they're the responsibility of the museum, right? They were there, their curator had them in the building, even if they weren't formally part of the collection of the museum, they were under the museum's care, they were stored there, and, you know, we know that she displayed them to the public in 2014, we know that she displayed them to donors to the museum, to major donors to the museum in 2015, we don't even really know how many other times, right, they were used for teaching purposes or, you know, to show them off. And we know that also that the curator and also a student who was the who is the daughter of a trustee of the University of Pennsylvania also took x-rays of several of these bones in 2018. So at the museum, right, using the museum's equipment. So in other words, they are the museum's responsibility one way or another, and it's their job to produce the remains, right, to find them, to tell us where they are, and not just tell us, but return them, in particular, return Delisa's remains to her mother, Janet Africa, and return, you know, Katricia's remains to her brother, Lionel Dobson. And those things need to happen. That's what should happen next. So that's one part of the answer for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And I'll just add too, and you know, to amplify the demand of MOVE Elders, which is to free Mumia, right? They are very clear about and adamant about that demand, that you know, that Mumia is incarcerated and that they want their comrade free, and that's the overwhelming demand here. Well,
and frankly, that's not an unreasonable demand for the university to take on. The university hasn't even acknowledged that demand, as far as I know. And they're a very powerful institution, and they've done an unbelievably heinous thing in the treatment of the remains of the people who were killed in that bombing. So the least they can do is at least respond to that demand.
Okay. Okay, family, so for me, that's the soft side. And what I mean by that is, of course, the diplomatic and the intellectual and other aspect of it, which we need to have because we are very well balanced. Now, let's go a little deeper and begin to examine something here. And it is, to put it mildly, this is horrific. This is horrific. And what I mean by that is, you know, to have an institution of the caliber of the University of Pennsylvania, which is one of the top five universities, which is and in parts of the world, to have this type of thing happen. Again, we're not dealing with people who don't dance some things. Certainly, we are not dealing with people who have no idea of ethics, okay, et cetera, et cetera. So my point is, and I thank both of you for, you know, conveying, you know, this in the way that you did. And so I'm just going to kind of raise the bar a little bit here on another level because, again, everything has its place. And again, we certainly appreciate you know, where both of you are in your presentation and, of course, in the way you provide the information. So I thank you both for that. On the other hand, as an activist, again, as a human rights activist and advocate, I have to point out some very critical things here. You know, it is absolutely mandatory for the University of Pennsylvania and others. I always say that, family, because it's never just the people that you see or that they tell you about. That's been my experience. There's always some other stuff going on, right? So we'll get to that part later. That's still with what we know we can prove at this point. So, okay, so here we have an institution that literally took the remains of people, of our people more particularly, and did not convey to the family that they had these remains. And by the way, let me backtrack for one moment. I don't know if either one of you can share this information for those who might not know. Are you able to share how we learned that the University of Pennsylvania had the remains?
Yeah, sure. I can explain how we learned about this.
Okay,
in 2019, the spring of 2019, I attended a 2-day symposium at the University of Pennsylvania. That symposium was organized by the Penn and Slavery Project, a project of undergraduate students doing research into the University of Penn's complicity in the transatlantic slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
I attended both dates fully. I saw the ad online somewhere and registered and went to the symposium, and I was curious about what I would learn because I had heard, some of the information about Penn's denial of a connection to the transatlantic slave trade, and was curious about what these students and other researchers and would present. One of the days, I heard a presentation about Samuel George Morton and his collection that Dr. Montero talked about earlier, which is called the Morton Cranial Collection. More specifically, I heard about 53 crania. That's a part of that collection, 51 from a plantation in Cuba, and then 2 from the U.S., 1 from Delaware, and I believe 1 from the Carolinas. And I was really, really upset. I'm not an academic. I'm someone who had lived close to the University of Pennsylvania my entire life. I can tell you stories about me being on that campus as a kid with my bike, right? And I was horrified by the fact that I had just learned about this collection of skulls, right, that were amassed and collected without consent, oftentimes traded globally. And that at the time in 2019, these remains, right, these remains of people were on mm-hmm. glass-fronted cabinets inside of an archaeology classroom at Penn Museum. So I stood up. I was really, really upset, visibly so, and very loud. And I said, mm-hmm. Why is this happening? Why do we have remains of people who the university even themselves said were probably enslaved people, right? Mm-hmm. And, the response from people was kind of like, oh, why are you reacting that way? Mm. That was the overwhelming response. Why are you reacting this way? This is what has always been done. This is what we do in these kinds of institutions. And I wasn't okay with it. So I said, if there's no action around this, I'm going to take action. And so I produced a change.org petition to say, no, return these remains to descendant community.
Right.
These are not your things to have, Penn.
That's right.
That mm-hmm. started getting traction. And then I wrote an op-ed for the Inquirer saying, return these remains, and talking about reparations, right? Because that was at the time that a lot of Democratic candidates for the presidency were talking about reparations. And I said, no, mm-hmm. Penn absolutely owes reparations to Black people.
That's right.
For what yes. they have done, what they continue to do. And that, a lot of people started talking about it. And then we get to 2020 after the state murder of George Floyd, of Breonna Taylor and Tony McDade. Then the university was then challenged again by a group called Police Free Penn, saying, like, no, Abdulaziz demands from 2019, you need to return these remains, right? And they expanded that demand to include digital images, right? Like, no, all the data, too, that you've extracted from these remains, you need to stop using and hand over, right? And then that became, a kind of a louder voice given what was happening in the United States. And they then remove the remains from the glass fronted cabinets and put them into storage. They create a committee to look into the question of repatriation of the remains. That's 2020. In 2021, a grad student named Paul Wolf Mitchell surfaces new research, basically saying that, wait a minute, there's more remains of Black people in this collection, and these Black people are Black Philadelphians, and those Black Philadelphians were patients at Philadelphia Almshouse, or the Blackley Almshouse, which was a part of where Penn's campus is today, and that those remains are there as well. And so I wrote another piece basically saying, again, it's past time to return these remains to descendant communities. Now we know that you have additional remains of Black Philadelphians. And then we did a joint action, myself and Police Free Penn, on April 8th, 2021. And we were in front of the museum. We had black religious people. We had black students who worked on the Penn and Slavery Project. We had other people who were close to the collection talk about their research, talk about, the two Black clergy people talked about how, the work of returning ancestors to rest or putting ancestors to rest is a work that's ongoing until it happens. And so after that action in April 2021, within a week or so, find out that they had the remains of Black children because a former director of the ICA, which is the Institute for Contemporary Art, I believe it's called, on Penn's campus, is a part of Penn. That person heard the news that they had committed, because after April 8th, they then publicly announced that they are going to repatriate the Morton Cranial Collection completely, that they promised to. And so this person heard the news and thanked me for my work on it and said, I have some bad, horrible information to impart to you about other remains. Right. And asked if I could get on a Zoom call with her. I get on a Zoom call with her on a Saturday following that email, and she tells me, she says, as the director of the ICA, I heard about the retention of the remains of Black children killed in the MOVE bombing. And I was, again, my body reacted in the same way, right? Upset, really angry. And I said, why are you bringing me this information? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do with this information? And she said, you had written about this before. I think you should write about this. I then inform someone close to MOVE members about what I was told. I verify that this is true by calling someone at Penn, asking them, did they know? And they said, yes. And then I share the information with a MOVE member. And I immediately called the editor that I worked with at the time at the Inquirer and began drafting an article. That article comes out on the 21st of April, as well as another article in Billy Penn. And so that's how we found out about these remains. Someone came to me and said, look, they're saying they're going to return these other remains, but they have other remains they have yet to talk about or acknowledge having.
Wow. Before we go back to Dr. Benterio, quick question, Brother Abdul. Was the Inquirer was they cooperative, or was they a little reluctant, or what, when you started writing about this?
I could tell you, I can go on for days about that. But needless to say that they were, you know, skeptical. I think they were, you know, they made me do a lot of work to show them that this was true. They even tried to, like, you know, push my story back so that another reported piece can come out beforehand, even though I had done the work of putting the pieces together. It wasn't friendly to someone who's freelance and also, you know, commentary, because oftentimes they don't allow people who write commentary to do the kind of in-depth research that I was doing. And write about it. So it was like pulling teeth, you know, to try to say, no, this is important. No, this is true, you know?
I figured that. And the reason why I said it or asked the question is because I remember when Momia was writing, you know, for various newspapers and reporting and so forth. And it's so much worse even now. Needless to say, the Association of Black Journalists here in Philadelphia is like a joke. It didn't used to be like that, needless to say. And, of course, Mumia was one of the presidents of the Philadelphia Association of Black Journalists.
And so
I see, I'm one of the people who can tell you some very, you know, some specifics about some things, which is why I'm not really liked very much here in Philly. Because as people used to say, they know where the bodies are buried. I know where a whole bunch of bodies are buried, and I plan to bury some more with information, right? And family, I'm raising this because I want people to be able to connect the dots, because elections are coming up for Philadelphia, y'all, like in other places in November. The mayor's election is coming and some other stuff. And folks need to be ready to ask questions about what folks' positions are on certain things. You know, we can't be encouraging people to vote. And you know, I mean, I know this stuff. Our ancestors died for you to vote. They didn't die for you to be stupid. Okay, so if you're just pulling the lever because, you know, you can, and you're not asking questions about, well, this representative that I'm getting ready to put in office, what are they standing for or with? These kind of questions have to now be asked. And so this is why we're bringing you some information, family, for those of you who are in Philly or whatever city you're in, because the issue that we're talking about is a human rights issue from my perspective and the way that we're presenting it. So what that means is, as Dr. Montero said, she lives in New York. She's in New York teaching. So, and we have listeners in New York and in other cities. So my point is, this is not just a Philadelphia situation. This is a legal matter that happened in Philadelphia, but it is a concern, or should be a concern, to all black folks, because this is a violation against us specifically. And I'm going to demonstrate that to you in a few minutes. In fact, Brother Abdul already kind of alluded to it in saying that there are fields of studies that specifically focuses on our people. Is that correct, Dr. Montero?
Oh, yes, that's very correct, yes.
Okay, all right. So we're not just talking stuff here, y'all. We can bring you the receipts. So going back to Dr. Montero. So, Dr. Montero, how did you get involved in this? Can you recap a little bit of that for us?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. As I said, I'd done a lot of research on, you know, the origins of scientific racism, American scientific racism in Philadelphia, and I also, you know, follow and work on museum ethics and archaeological ethics issues. So my awareness that the Morton Cranial Collection existed at the Penn Museum was something that really, really deeply bothered me. I had actually seen it there when I had a postdoctoral fellowship at the University of Pennsylvania in 2013 to 2014, and I wasn't aware that it was on display, but it was on display. Part of it was on display in the galleries, not just in the classroom and at that time. And it was an exhibit that basically, under the guise of kind of educating people about Morton's higher ideas of hierarchies of races, it actually basically taught people that idea, if you know what I mean, right? So it's kind of reinforcing his racism.
But Dr. Montero, can you stop for one moment? Can you kind of like rephrase that a little bit? What you just said? In other words, the intention of that particular, shall we say, exhibit or display or information was to convey what?
Well, listen, the way that I think it was supposed to be, you were supposedly supposed to take away from it was like, oh, this is just what he thought. But it's an exhibit in a museum. And the museum is basically teaching people, like, with literally, like, skulls of five different races arranged, you know, hierarchically, above, vertically, one above the other, right? Like, it was basically teaching people that, first of all, that you can define race based on somebody's skull and by the size of somebody's skull, which is not true, right? For one thing. And for another thing, right, that this idea, of course, is reinforcing, you know, white supremacist ideas about racial hierarchies, you know? It basically was and this is exactly the kind of thing that Janet Mons, the curator, who is the same curator who had Catrice and Delisha's Remains, this is exactly the kind of thing she did all the time with Morton Science, was just kind of presented as if, like, well, I'm not a racist, but he thought this, you know?
Okay, so sidebar, then we're going to come back to you, Dr. Montero. So, family, so now, let me just give it to you from the street. So the exhibit was to sort of give information or concepts or ideals or ideas about human beings, and in that, Black folks or people of African descent or Afrinoids, as some might call us them, were inferior in the scale of things, in the hierarchy, as Dr. Montero called it, the hierarchy. But we're going to say in the development of human species. How about that? And as such, where we were considered, just like, you know, they say we was, what was it, five-fifths, one-fifth, or whatever, some of stuff. Just like that, here we are with, here's how they come to that conclusion based on science. And lastly, for those of you who are familiar with the bell curve, this is a similar kind of connection to how you evaluate intelligence and other things relevant to that. This is what we're talking
about
here,
y'all. Absolutely.
Okay. If y'all want me to break that down for you a little more, I can. But I think y'all kind of get it, right? But so this is the kind of stuff that is going on right in our faces, y'all. And by the way, some of you are sending your children or your young adults to these institutions, and guess what? This is what they're learning. Anyway, that was the sidebar there. Okay, so now.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that, too, because it does allow me to slow down a little bit and also say that you're absolutely right. I'm going to reverse the order of that, though. It's not that they derived the ideas about Black inferiority from science. They took that idea into what they then designed their experiments to prove.
Right. Okay. Oh,
because there's nothing inherent, you know, like there's nothing inherent in the measurements that Morton was doing that mean anything. He just happened to figure out a way to make them, you know, correlate to what he wanted, to the racial beliefs that he already had. Right.
Sure.
And those were quite specifically that it was a theory called polygenesis. So if you think about Genesis in the Bible as the creation of Adam and Eve and all of that, and all of humankind comes from that, polygenesis.
Right.
Of whom, you know, Morton was one of the most prominent, and it's one of the reasons why he's so influential in the development of racist science and medicine as well. Morton believed that there were five, well, I think he probably, I don't know if he ever pinned it down, but I think he would have said there were five different origins of mankind.
Right.
In different places, so that people were, so that different races were actually different species. That's how, that's how completely different, you know, the five races, according to him, were.
Oh,
yeah.
Goodness.
And you're actually right. I mean, like, school tours are like what the bread and butter of a museum, like the Penn Museum. So, so hundreds, thousands of school kids would have seen that exhibit.
Absolutely. Okay, one other question for you, Dr. Montero, and then we're going to go back to Brother Abdul, and it is this. So you being in New York, by any chance, have you done research on or anything in reference to the father of gynecology?
Yes, I have. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Share with us about that. I mean, we'll have this other conversation at another time to deal specifically with that. But I was just curious, is there anything we could share with us about that? And by the way, family, again, this is when black women in particular were used for scientific research and study. Well, because, you know, it was believed that black women could tolerate pain much better than anybody. And so there were different studies on black women dealing with, you know, the reproductive areas. I mean, I'm sure other stuff too, but we're talking about in terms of gynecology because we have a lot of data and research information that gives you that. And of course, with no anesthesia, by the way. So Dr. Montero, is there anything you can share with us about some of your findings that you might have come across in dealing with the father of gynecology?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple of things mainly come to mind, one of which is related to, you know, these questions of commemoration and what gets remembered, right? This guy had a statue up until about, I want to say 2018, the statue came down.
Up until five years ago,
there was a statue honoring this man in Spanish Harlem, right on Central Park.
And
presenting him, as you said, like as you know, as a hero, as a great pioneer of medicine and nothing else, right? That statue has been removed. It was the first statue to come down in New York City. It's now still only one of two statues that has come down, despite all the movement all around the country that's happened. And that happened through, you know, long-term organizing, lots of work, lots of artistic interventions over the years, some of which I was a part of, and, you know, also a really amazing book, Harriet Washington's Medical Apartheid, which raised a lot of awareness about Sims and his work. Dr. J. Marion Sims is his name. Another thing that comes to mind about him, though, is in connection with what we're talking about, is that he, like most doctors in the 19th century, particularly the early 19th, before the Civil War, he was trained in Philadelphia. I'm not 100% certain right now, but I think he got his degree at Jefferson.
Right.
And, you know, so if he wasn't in the 1830s, and if he wasn't actually literally one of Morton's, Samuel George Morton's students, he certainly was around that culture and around those ideas. And all of these things really are tied together. And they all come back to Philadelphia.
Right. Yeah, I try to tell folks on many occasions that Philadelphia, you know, is a very, very interesting place. You know, not that other cities aren't, but when it comes to certain very specific things, Philly, you cannot match it. I have brothers and sisters in Chicago, Detroit, and, of course, each city has its own dynamic and, you know, and its own flavor. But Philly, people got to remember, this is where the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the first Capitol of the United States, and the first White House, where Washington had his slaves at, by the way. So needless to say, this is where some stuff really was officiated, you see. And so dealing with history, whenever you have something that is the founding of something, that has a little more oomph to it, you see. And so this is why history is so important, why they, you know, attempted to plagiarize and do all of the stuff with our history, because anyone that understands the science and the dynamics of that know that history is really powerful, you know, particularly when it's in its proper context. So Dr. Montero is absolutely correct. Philadelphia is very, very interesting. And lastly, for those of you who don't know, the Boule was starting in Philadelphia. And y'all can keep thinking that, oh, it's just a benevolent society of folk. I can prove to you that is not. I've been a victim of some stuff that these people have done, or if not done per se, people that they either sent, people that want to be them or something. And I'm going to give you some names a little later, not right now, but moving right along. And by the way, Mumia Abu-Jamal, believe when Mumia was elected or selected one of the 10 most up-and-coming people in Philly, and when he did not kiss the ring, OMG. So y'all, people don't really know what happened, all right? They thought, oh, we got a good one here. He's brilliant. He's articulate. He's da-da-da. We're going to bring him in, and he's going to become one of us. Well, when Mumia said, I don't think so, they was like, you're not going to be one of us? Well, let me show you what we're going to do with you. And the rest is history. That was another sidebar, y'all. Let's go back. Okay. So I'm going to open up the phone lines, family. If you have a comment or a question, particularly a question, you can press one now, and we certainly would love to have some of you join the conversation before we bring Chairman Fred in, who's going to give us a little good news, you know, because this right here is, I mean, I'm hoping you all are really grasping what's being said. Because this is serious stuff. I mean, how do you take, let me not say how, because we live in America, so you already know how, but to do this, to take the remains of, particularly of children, and then to use this for scientific or educational purposes, not even consider the family, or consider the family not give a damn. I mean, this is very serious. We're talking about top intellectuals here to do this kind of thing. So my point, family, is what say you? How about that? Because, you know, certainly it's going to take the masses of our people to now step up. And particularly if you're in Philadelphia, y'all need to really do this. Not y'all, we. I'll say we, because 85 folks were outraged in Philly, the black community in particular, but folks in general. But after a year or so, it died. Everything died down. This is what Philly folk do. They get hype-oriented over an issue, and then after that, they go right back to sleep. They did it with Mumia. They did it with Moo. They did it with Million Women March. So we're creating an element now where that doesn't happen. Consistency is key. So now let's go to our live lines. And again, family, if you have a question or comment, question in particular, press one now. And we certainly will bring you into the conversation. Okay, let's go. Caller at 4524. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
On the move, Filet.
Hey, greetings.
On the move.
On the move. We got Sister Janet and Janine in the house. All right.
Yeah.
How's my sister tonight?
We're doing good. We're doing good, staying strong. You know, we were listening to the program. And what I want to say to people and for people to really understand that all they have done to the MOVE organization back in 1976, 77, the attack on our house in 78, August of 78, the bombing of our family May 13th, the murder of our family, the persecution has not stopped. And this example with the remains is just showing people how it's ongoing. You know, they killed my three-week-old baby, Life Africa, in 1976, right in front of our house. We went through all the proper channels. Nothing was done. They killed so many of our babies, beat the women into miscarriage, and we went to the different officials, news media, courts. Nothing was done. You know, and now here we go again, years later, and the persecution is still going on. We did 41 years in prison for a crime we didn't commit. And you would think after all that we've been through, when is it going to stop? When? I mean, look at this. Look who would desecrate and disrespect the remains of children. Children that they murdered. And people need to understand this. Our children didn't just pass away from an illness or something. They were murdered, ruthlessly murdered, shot back into a burning building. And if that's not enough, they couldn't even let their remains be put to rest, be at peace. You know, people don't know. The way we found out about our children, a guard come to our door and just tell each one of the mothers that our children are dead. We went through that. We struggled. We drew on our belief, and we made it through. But here we are. After 41 years in prison, we had to endure that. We get out here, and we find out what they have done to our children. People need to understand what's going on. And see, it's not just a MOVE issue. People need to see that this is the reason why this city, the city of Philadelphia, has turned into the murder capital of the whole country. And the reason for this, Sister Filet, is because the leaders of this city, this government, set the example of murder. What do they expect to happen in this town when they publicly murdered men, women, and babies and animals, publicly for the whole world to see, and nothing was done. Not one official, not one cop spent a day in prison. You know, when Mona was on trial, they found her guilty, and then the jurors came back upset and emotional because they said the only reason why they found Ramona guilty was because that judge promised them that both sides would be held responsible for what happened May 13th. And when them people found out that no city official was going to be held responsible, they couldn't believe it because they would have never found Mona guilty. Never. And we want people to see this train of persecution that this system has spit on the MOVE organization for 50 years. 50 years. You know, and despite all that they have done to us, when this issue came out about our family, our children's remains, and they asked us what they could do to rectify it, we told them, we want you to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Put the wheels in motion. You can't give us back our family. You can't give us back that 41 years we did in prison, innocent. But Mumia's alive, and he's innocent. You can make an effort and release him or put the wheels in motion. And do you know, Sister Filet, they are acting like we haven't said a word. Nobody has responded to this demand. Nobody. They didn't even have the decency to tell us we're not responding to it. They're acting like we haven't said a word. They're acting mm-hmm. like what we're saying is of no consequence, none. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're talking about. You know, the anger we feel is just ongoing because of their persecution is ongoing. What more do they want from us? What more do they expect? We need to look at what's going on. Look at this. Who does this to children? Who? And they lied about it. Lied about it. They told the relatives of the different MOVE people that was killed in that house, they told them that they turned over the remains. They
right.
had, you know, services, burials, everything. They told them this. 38 years later, you talking about you still got the remains of our family. Just lying and just, it's like you said, it's horrible and heinous. Heinous
mm-hmm.
what they
mm-hmm.
are doing. What they are doing. And, you know, we just want people to understand and see this, you know, because like you said, you can't be excited about it at the time and then let time go on and you drop it because
mm-hmm.
you got to see what you're dealing with here. They are not letting up. They are criminals, and they have spit this hate, this disrespect on the MOVE organization for over 50 years and still ongoing. I mean, they just disrespected us, our family, our children, and spit in our face. Had all these investigations come to us and ask us what can we do to try to, you know, patch things up. We give them one demand, one, and they spit in our face. Spit in our face and still lying. And we want to just thank Brother Abdul Ali Muhammad and Dr. Montero for having the courage to come forth and not let this issue drop. That takes a lot. You know,
yes.
That takes a lot, especially with the threat of these people talking about putting them in jail and coming after them for telling the truth. So, you know, from the MOVE organization, from the John Africa's MOVE family, we thank you. And it means a lot because somebody is listening and trying to make a difference. And it means a lot to us to have him take this stand and for Dr. Montero to back him up. So, you know, we really want to thank you, but we want people to understand what's going on here. And like you said, don't relax, because we're not, you know, we're not out publicly every day, you know, in the news media and saying a lot, but believe you me, we have not let this go. We're not sitting by idly and not doing anything about this. And we want people to know that.
Sister
Janet. How you doing, Sister Janet? Hey, Sister Janet. All right.
You know, steam is just coming from my head. You know, it's a very, very hard thing to have to grasp about these sick, murderous misfits. This is something that people need to take serious, because it don't start and stop with MOVE people. With our ancestors, this has been going on for a long time. They've been persecuting MOVE for fighting against this kind of stuff. They murdered our brothers, our sisters, our children in jail 41 years for a crime we didn't commit. They murdered their own cops and then set us up for it and sent us to jail. They murdered our children. And not only did they murder our children, after they murdered them, they desecrated their bodies, dumped their bones on the floor like they was nothing.
like they didn't have no feelings. That's the same way they treated Move throughout all those years. They didn't care. All they wanted to do was get rid of Move. Stop John Africa. And in doing that, they thought that they could put us in jail, that they could lock us up, that they could murder us, desecrate the bones of our children, and get away with it. People ought to be raged, outraged, because it ain't just Move. It's not just our children. It's not just our ancestors. This has been going on for a long time, and it needs to stop. It needs to stop now. People need to wake up and see what's going on here. These people will not. They will not let our children's remains rest in peace. They will not let us be at peace. You know, we had a fight against this system to expose it for everybody to see exactly what they are. If people can't see what they are now, take off them blinders, because it's not just affecting Move. It's affecting you and your family too. Move has been out here demonstrating, fighting for over 50 years, Sister Filet, and you know it. And yep. We've been representing. We've taken positions that nobody else wanted to take or could take or was afraid to take. We gave an insurance policy through John Africa's teaching that would happen to us August 8, 1978, and would happen to us May 13th, would never happen again, because the strategy of John Africa brought so much pressure on these people that they would never try that again. And that is an insurance policy that was given to our people by John Africa. And because of our commitment and loyalty to John Africa and to this revolution, we put ourselves out there to fight the fight for people. Now we saying we want people to fight for us, fight for life, fight for our children, fight for your children, fight for life, fight for the air, the water, the soil that we need to stay alive, that these misfits are killing the same way that they killed our children. Wake up for real. And we are here. We are proof of it. I mean, 50 years in jail, out of jail, beat up, in court, exposing this system, and they have not let up. And by this example that's being given now by Abdul and the doctor, they still ain't giving up. They still ain't giving up. And they using this desecration, I mean, putting our children's remains out there for people to walk by like they at some goddamn zoo or something. You know, oh, take a look. I mean, how horrible is that? How sickening. Make you want to throw up to hear some shit like that. But do you think these people care? No. They want to put pressure on the doctor and Abdul. Act like they doing something wrong the same way they did to us. When we confronted this system with John Africa cheating, they beat us up and turned it around and charged us with assault. And that's what they're trying to turn it around on them. But we are so grateful for y'all telling the truth, putting it out there, because people to see need to see it for what it is. And people, we want people to understand that our teaching, the teaching of John Africa, is what brought people into Move. It brought people into Move, people that were drug addicts, people that were sick, people that were just out there confused. But John Africa turned us all around so we could come out and fight against this system. That's why Move is here, foes this system. Yes, we have suffered a lot of hardship, but God damn it, we ain't stopping. You know, we ain't letting this stop us either. As a matter of fact, we getting more fired up than ever. So people, wake up and understand. Understand the influence that's behind Move and what we are doing to fight this system, to expose this system, how far John Africa has brought us, and we are not going to stop. We are not going to stop. I don't care what they do. I don't care what they do. And as far as Mumia goes, like Janine said, these people act like we ain't said nothing, Sister Filet. They didn't answer us, acknowledge the fact that Mumia is innocent, and we want him out of jail. They didn't even respond to that. That's how. You know, but meanwhile, acting like they're so concerned about what happened. So,
well, my sisters, we know, you know, of course, what the system, and as you said, they have 400 plus years of demonstrating their mentalities and behaviors. And by the way, again, from a historical perspective, I forget his name. I think it's called Benga, something like that. They had captured one of our people decades ago and put him in a zoo. It's in my brain, but this was decades ago. And put him in a zoo, right, here in the U.S., so that people could see him. So to my history of doing in country, you know, had, you know, she had large blocks of a black woman, you know. But anyway, black people thought it was so, you know, interesting and so peculiar at that time that they put her in, like, and then after she, they put her foot in a car. So these people were and had it on display and they call it hot pot Venus. So there is, you know, anyone you have, and there is a specific kind of behavior that in land, and this is what you see. This situation with the Moon family is just another. So that you don't have the history when it's your face today. You can't say, well, what happened 100 years ago or 150 years ago or 400 years ago? Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? It's happening today.
Today.
See, that's why we have to connect the dots here. It's happening today. And to hear this new evidence. Again, you know, family, I'm just saying, Brother Malcolm said, you either stand up for something or fall for anything. So what is it going to be? This is not just about move. This is why in tonight's program we present it to you from another vantage point. I mean, there's many angles or areas you can look at, but we're saying genocide. See, this argument is not one that comes under the jurisdiction or the reign of certain other arguments. Been there, done that. This is why we're introducing to you the concepts of another dynamic here, human rights violations. This is not just civil rights or constitutional rights violation. This is human rights violations. So we're putting it out there in that kind of manner because we know that the system has us indoctrinated, and so our thinking processes tend to start confusing stuff sometimes and thinking one way as opposed to looking at the bigger picture. So again, we're being microscopic and saying, regardless of what you think or we think, regardless of what happened here or there, okay, fine. But right here, right now, today, there are remains of children. The families were denied, if for lack of a better word, healing or closure. They were denied, whatever you want to call it. That's real. Any other stuff can be debated or people, but that right there, there's no argument. It is, period. So we need to begin to have more discussions about plan of action. Now let me digress for one moment. I need to go back to Dr. Monterio and Brother Abdul. I did not know until Sister Janet mentioned the both of you are under attack.
Yeah. I just want to just say to Janet, Janine, the MOVE elders, my heart, my mind, this work, you know, is all meant to ensure that this does not get swept under the rug, that people know about it. And, you know, I'm forever transformed by all of the sacrifices you've all made fighting this brutal system. And I won't stop. I'm going to continue to shine a light on what they're doing, what they continue to do. I'm going to continue to say what your central and one demand is, which is to free Mumia. And, you know, ever since I learned about what Penn has been doing, and I can't let it up. I just cannot. And that's why we are here, and we're here with you all in solidarity. And I'm going to continue to call this out, continue to shout out the demand that you all have. And in terms of the attack, yeah, I mean, you know, when I wrote about this in 2021,
mm-hmm.
There was, you know, the University of Pennsylvania, they hired Tucker Law Group, which is a black law firm, right, to investigate mm-hmm. the chain of custody of these remains. And they try to discredit me, right? They try to claim mm-hmm. that this was all due to some kind of beef with Janet Mons that a graduate student had with her, right? Try to diminish mm. the work by saying, oh, this person put us up to writing the stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely mm-hmm. anti-black. And they put a black law firm task of lying on their behalf, right, and covering up the lie. And then I was sued by Janet Mons. I'm a part of a lawsuit. She's suing me. When she held the remains of MOVE Children, she's suing me and others. And that lawsuit is still ongoing. And, you know, after the press conference on Thursday, I entered the museum, right, to demand to meet with Christopher Woods and demand with Lyra that the museum shut down until they figure out what happened to these remains. They cornered us. You know, we went into a classroom, I mean, not a classroom, an office, and cops surrounded us. They shut the door. They detained us. They pushed out a journalist, even though we know that's illegal, right? Pushing out a journalist.
Right.
And they held us in this office for a minute. And then they, you know, open the door and they tell us we can leave. And then meanwhile, there's like six cops outside of the office. There's, you know, cops rotating in and out of the room that we're in. You know, they shut down the museum. They closed the bathrooms. And we demanded to speak to the director, Christopher Woods. Where's Christopher Woods? They are relentless in their violence, like both Janine and Janet have said. And, yeah, they're attacking us as if we did something wrong, just like they did to MOVE elders and to MOVE over the years, right? Because we're saying, no, we have you. We have Janet photographically, like Dr. Monterio said, with these remains, showing them to people visiting the museum in 2014. There's
mm-hmm.
nothing they can say to that. So they create more new lies, right, to cover up their older ones.
Sure. So let me ask this, because, again, we don't have this conversation for the sake of, you know, just having a conversation. We have to do a plan of action. So MWM and our Recharge Genocide 21 project is working on a Black Student and Young Adults Conference for November 15th through the 17th. And the purpose of that conference is a justice and freedom or justice and liberation conference for students. Because I came into this as a student. When I was a student, I went to the MOVE barricade to bring food and water. I was there in 1978 as a student, you see. So that's why, as Sister Janine and Janet can say, I know this stuff. I saw it. And I'm saying as a student, see, the students today don't have that kind of direction for the most part. Maybe college students, but not junior, not middle school and high school. So we're doing 3 days to remember Black student movements from the 1950s up to now. So here's what I'm saying we need to do. This needs to be presented to the students as part of the conference because it was the students that did a walkout in 1968 here in Philadelphia. They walked out and fought with the police on November 17th, 1968. Now, that was before my time, actually. But I study our history and particularly movement. So here's my point. We have to bring our students into these issues because they're not afraid, particularly if they know the truth. So again, Brother Abdul, I'm asking if you will be a part of us bringing this conference into place and working on this particular presentation so that we can have the students to hear it and respond.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely.
And Janet, mm-hmm. and Janine, definitely, and also Dr. Montero, we need for our students to hear. This happened in Philadelphia. The students in this city need to know the history and not just know it from what they saw on TV or what they heard. They need to see and hear what has happened here and how they can get involved.
Yeah.
And lastly, again, from the context of justice, they're not given information about fundamental civics, fundamental rights. They get a little bit about Dr. Martin Luther King and some other stuff, but not about, they don't know what the UN is. Most of them have no idea. And so, again, it's thinking about the future, and I'm not putting a whole lot of credit in the UN, y'all, so y'all know me, that's not it. But I'm saying from strategic moves, we are taking this issue into the United Nations next year because we want it on record. I'm going to consult with Sister Janine and Janet and others because we want to be able to have other countries to know about 1985, a bomb being dropped in an urban neighborhood where 645 homes go up. We want this to be on record in the United Nations. You see, this is the kind of thing that now has to happen. And so we're letting people know this is our plan of action.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I was going to say that I am definitely going to commit to being a part of that. Like I said to you, anytime the MOVE elders, in particular the MOVE mothers, ask or they send someone my way, I'm going to absolutely participate. And so, I'm down. And anytime they, you know, Janine, Janet, anyone who's a MOVE elder tells me that I need to talk to someone or participate in something, I'll definitely show up and be there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely.
And that goes for me as well.
Thank you.
I want to talk with you because we're going to be connecting to some elements in New York because, again, the United Nations is in New York. And so next year, for those who do not know, we are presently in what's known as the International Decade for African People. This is a United Nations declaration that for the past 8 years has been observed internationally as the International Decade for African People. And so groups all over the world have been having conversations about kinds of things. including, you know, terrorism and da-da-da-da, but you name it, it's being discussed in circles. So, again, next year is the end of the International Decade for African People. So a lot of groups are preparing for presentations so that things can get on record. Because, again, if nothing else, it helps to educate people. And so we want to be prepared. So, again, Montero, I'd like to talk with you certainly in the near future about what our plans are, because I'll be definitely coming to New York in December because it's International Human Rights Day at the United Nations. And then we come every year for March, which is Women's History Month. And so the United Nations does a two-week session just for women, and they come from all over the world. So we want to be ready to really present to others. See, this is, again, from an organizing standpoint, how we're able to get more input, more involvement, more information circulated. And that, of course, will create action. So this is incredible. This is wonderful. I appreciate you all. Listen, we're getting ready to close out. Before we do, again, family, if you have any questions or comments, but any of our family guests on the line tonight, now is the time to press 1. We want to bring Tim and Fred in before we close out. So we're going to call her at 2816. 2816, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Thank you, sister. You're living on the front line.
Yes, yes, yes. You have a question or comment?
It's a comment, ma'am. Sister, okay. Start the program with Mamiya talking about Donald Trump. I want to warn the family. He's planning a civil war. He has an army called the Mega Army, and they're planning a civil war to put him back in office. It's on the internet. It's on the computer. Google Mega Army. Donald Trump's Mega Army. He's organizing an army to fight and kill us. What you saw in Jacksonville, Florida, this past weekend with the three killings at the Dollar General store, that was just a pre-warm-up. He couldn't wait. But and now the other side of that, I'm talking fast. The other side of that, the black movement, okay, they call to combat Donald Trump's army, they call not fucking around coalition. I'm going to say that again. Not fucking around coalition. Google it. It's on the internet. Not fucking around coalition.
We're familiar with him, brother, but he's in jail now.
Yeah, he is. He's from my hometown, by the way. But my point again now, okay, so we need to prepare. Store up water, beans, rice, dry foods, so in case there's a martial law, when Trump's army hit the streets, we're prepared. We're prepared. Okay. With food and drink and water, we can't go outside. But this is the warning to the nation, the people, the family. Organize. Kwame Ture said, organize, organize, organize. And one last thing, sister. Thanks for taking my call, by the way. One last thing. The sister that you were talking about, that they call in Europe the freak of nature because her butt was so big. And they cut her in half and put her in Marlahide and put her on exposition. Her name was Sarah Batima. They call her Sarah Batima Hati. I Googled you that already, by the way. It's on your cell number, and you can look at it when you get a chance.
Yes, I have it.
Anyways,
I mean, I have it in my files.
Okay, well, it's on your phone now for show. But anyway, great show as usual. Oh, wait, one last thing. Was that Brother Abdul? Was he what's known as Abdullah?
No.
That's another brother.
Yeah, this is a younger, much younger brother.
Okay, because you remember Abdullah. What happened to him?
Of course. That's what I'm saying. It's a much younger brother.
Okay, no, but I'm saying, what happened to Abdullah?
Well, let's do that another time, brother, because we're running out of time.
Okay, that was a fighting brother. I love that brother. All right, sister.
All right,
on the move. Keep it going. On the move.
All right.
Peace and love.
All right, family, got one more caller, and then we're going to wrap up this segment. And, caller, you are at 9462. 9462, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment of New Day.
Can you hear me?
Just vaguely. Can you speak a little louder?
A
I'm not hearing you at all now.
Is this better?
A little better, but we'll go with it. Go ahead.
This
you
is
have
Elder
a question
Mama
or comment?
Kandi. I was speaking. This is Elder Mama Kandi, and I wanted to share a connecting in Columbus, Ohio. They're doing the Tut Tut Ankh Amun tour. They have this ancestor, and they're touring him throughout the nation. It makes it clear why they think they can get away with taking our children's remains the way they did, because they've always done that. They're always digging us up. Where is Ariaket, the sister that they dug up who was a million years old, and the sister before her, 2 million years old. They dug her up. Where is she? It makes us understand that this is their normal behavior. This is what they do. And our issue is going to be to figure out what we're going to do about it, because 7.2 million years is a long time to have people continue to disrespect us and still doing it today and acting like it's our fault somehow. I yield.
All right. Thank you, Mama. All right, family. So we're going to get ready to close this session out. Before we do, we're going to get some closing comments briefly from each of our guests for tonight. But I'd like to bring Chairman in just so that I have him in queue, and also so that he can give a quick greeting to sisters Janet and Janine. So one moment. Hopefully he'll pick up.
Remote.
Chairman.
Yes. Hold on. On speakerphone. How you do this thing on speaker?
Listen, before we bring you on, I just wanted to let you give a quick greeting to Sister Janine and Janet Africa. They're on the line with us.
Love and respect. On the move, how y'all feel? On the move.
Hey, Chairman Fred,
how you doing?
I'm great. I was just tired, but my spirits just get up just by hearing y'all voices. Good to hear y'all.
That's a long time. We haven't heard your voice in a long time.
I miss y'all. We miss y'all. We love y'all. We miss y'all. Love y'all so much. Yes, indeed.
You guys come on, stop and see us.
We're going to make it happen. We're going to make it happen very soon. We'll get that way very soon. Yes, indeed. I definitely will. And make sure y'all don't send our love and respect to the whole to the family on that end.
All right, now.
Chairman Fred, put yourself on mute just for like 2 minutes. I just want to give them some closing comment time, and then I'm going to bring you in, okay?
All right.
So listen, let's go to our sisters and get some closing comments, and then we'll have Dr. Monterio, and then we'll have Brother Abdul to close out. Sister Janet and Janine, your closing comments.
Our closing comment is this system will never stop John Africa's MOVE organization, and we just want everybody else to see this strength and be influenced by it and help us to fight this rotten system. Long live John Africa.
Long live John Africa. We will not stop fighting, y'all, and everybody needs to wake up and see what's going on around them, because, you know, closed eyes, closed ears is not going to stop these people from doing what they're doing. And we was always told by John Africa that you might as well fight, because they're going to put hell on you anyway, so you might as well fight. And we're going to keep on fighting despite whatever they come with. And people that don't have the inclination, don't have the muscle or whatever to fight, you can do it other ways. You can, like Sister Filet was saying, you can use your feet, use your voice, use your text,
that's right,
anything to put pressure on these people, on these politicians. Let them know that you don't appreciate what's going on, and what are they going to do about it? You haven't heard a word from them, that they haven't said anything. You know, put pressure on them, because that's the only way that these people work, through pressure. Anything else, all they're going to do is chin, grin, and smile, and lie.
That's people, right.
Wake up. Look around you and see what's going on. This is not a game. It's for real. They will beat you, jail you, put you in jail, kill you, and then desecrate your remains. It's not just moves they're doing it to. They will do it to you. They will do it to your mother, your father, your sister, your brother. They will stop at nothing. But they're not going to stop this organization. They're not going to stop the power of John Africa. Because even if they could shut us up, it's out there now. People got that example of what to do to keep on fighting. And that's what MOVE is going to do. Long live John Africa.
Ashe, ashe. Thank you, my sisters. All right, some closing comments from Dr. Montero.
Okay, well, first of all, it's been an amazing honor to be part of this conversation tonight. And thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much, Janine and Janet, for being here. It's such painful work that I've been doing with Abdul Ali, but it's also been really felt like it hasn't been a choice, right? It's felt like I've needed to do it, and it's been an honor to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And I also won't stop. And one thing, though, that I wanted to go back to the last caller mentioning, of course, they do this, they collect the bones of children murdered in 1985 because they've always been doing that, right? There are the remains of literally hundreds of thousands of stolen ancestors in museums around the United States. It's not just the Penn Museum, and around the world in colonial capitals. And so the work that that Abdul Ali and I have been co-convening more broadly around that, which we're calling Finding Ceremony, is really at the core of how I'm approaching all of these cases of desecrated remains that need to be returned and need to be given the opportunity for family and for descendants to help them find ceremony and rest.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Okay. Brother Abdul, you're next. Your closing words.
Yeah, I just want to, I want to just express my love and my gratitude and deep reverence for Janet, Janine, and MOVE Elders, and for you, Sister Filet, and thank you for having me on here. And I'll just echo what Janine and Janet said, which is that this work continues, that long live John Africa, Free Mumia, Abu Jamal, and that we'll continue, Lyra and I, through the work of Finding Ceremony, to put pressure on Penn and other colonial institutions to return the bodily remains of our ancestors to us. And the point around putting pressure on these politicians is absolutely correct. We're going to continue to do that through Finding Ceremony, meeting with people about the fact that they need to stand up and say something about this. And we've been saying this. We said this at City Council in June. That they need to actually look into what the holdings of these institutions, right? We're not clear what's in these institutions. They're not clear about what they have. And so continue to do that political work, and I won't rest. I'll continue to put pressure on these institutions.
Well, I definitely would like to invite you to be a part of the Independent Commission on Black Human Rights. And that way, again, we are connected to United Nations work. And that way, when we start stepping to these people in City Council and all this other stuff, we do it with them knowing that we will be taking reports back to other entities. These are some of the things that kind of pushes their buttons, you see. So we'll definitely be talking more about that in the near future. And again, I thank you, my brother. I thank you all for the work that you are all doing. And as our sisters opened up and said, on the move.
On the move.
On the move. All right. Good, thanks. Hi, family. Absolutely. Let's get Chairman Fred back in and get his report. And we should have him right about now, I think.
Okay.
Chairman, all right, we got you.
There's some people in Chicago trying to call in. I gave them your number and this number, so I don't know.
They have to call in the station number. The 319 number. Yeah, the 319.
Hold on, hold on 1 second. I'm driving.
And
I'm
they
driving.
Got to do it in about 1 minute. They're the 319-527-6189.
Well, I ain't going to be doing it. I'm driving this crazy. I'm driving this racing right now. I ain't going to be able to fight it.
Okay,
yeah.
No problem. So what we need to do, Chairman, is, let's get with you because we've closed out that segment. So, family, we have Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. with us in the house as usual, one of our family. And, of course, Chairman just returned from Paris. Chairman, give us a little insight into your trip to France. What was that about?
Well, the delegation conference, we established an organization convening coming from far as Brazil and other places throughout Africa in regards to a number of different issues, particularly police terrorism. And in fact, let me give you a backdrop too. My first time ever out the country in my life, I went to France with a delegation with Comrade Minister Conversation, Pam Africa, Ramon Africa, and others in regards to the case of the long-held political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. As my first time going to France. And that was 2007, I believe. But that was my first time. So also we had to check on the case of our Deputy Chairman Franco, who used to work on for the Black Panther Party Cubs. He's over there. He's been fighting a case for quite some time about he was charged with taking down one of these real famous racist statue in France. And also the case of, I'm saying his brother's name, Amon, the young brother who was killed by the police in Paris, France, which resulted in uprisings throughout France. You still see some remnants of it even right now to this day. We had a lot to address over there. You know, in the present day Rainbow Coalition, Indigenous Comrades, Tiny House Warriors, and others was over there with us. We had a lot to address, so get over there, address that. Came right back, had to get back in. I was hesitant to leave at first that close to the annual Chairman Fred Streets party. This would be Chairman Fred's 75th birthday. We got back, we hit the ground running, and we had the annual Chairman Fred's Peace Party. But this year, we have pulled up a proclamation is to be actually heard in City Hall. But that, some reason they're not even convening in City Hall right now for this month. So cut to the chase. Present mayor of Chicago, Mayor Johnson, coming right, right after the 5 and the digital, silent vigil we do at Ground Zero where the assassination occurred at. And he delivered a proclamation we've been working on quite some time. Proclamation that straight out acknowledged August 30th from here on, August 30th. Be acknowledged as Chairman Fred Hampton Day. Not Fred Hampton Day, but Chairman Fred Hampton Day.
Wonderful.
This is my monument. Yeah.
Yay.
Wonderful. Well, there you know, again, it's good to hear some good news, I tell you.
Yeah. We left there, came to Maywood, where the Hampton Wood House is at, and the mayor of Maywood, they had placed the seal placed on the house, which, you know, the official seal acknowledges it's a Maywood, a Maywood landmark.
Okay.
It was back to back, and then after that, I hit the road that same night. You know, everybody was like, tell me to get some rest, so hit the road, to Minnesota with Brother Cortez Rice, whose son Jamari Rice was killed on school property 2 years ago, and myself and sister Bianca, who's the auntie of Breonna Taylor.
Right.
Yeah. So her auntie, all of and Brother Jacob Blake, probably enrolled up to Minnesota for an event, and we got that day in Richland, Minnesota, in my Jamari Rice Day, that day. So it's been back to back. Then we just came back from doing some events here in Chicago, and I think they got me set to head back out tomorrow to Milwaukee. A guy named Allen, I can't recall his last name, but anyway, one of the merchants at the gas stations, it was revealed that an Indian merchant had paid someone in the community to kill this other young brother. Shoot him point blank. It's real hot in Milwaukee right now. So I'm saying that the funeral for this young brother is Tuesday. I can't recall his name right now, but I'm set to speak at that funeral Tuesday.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Whew. So you know, Cameron, you always on the move. You're always moving. So I know that this is going on. Well, one other quick thing. I remember, I think before you went to Paris, you went to St. Louis for the... Can you give us a little insight into that?
Oh, man. I would be remiss not to mention that. Yeah, at the Chairman Fred, my fault. At the Chairman... I was a keynote speaker for the 9th year anniversary, the uprisings, rebellions that occurred in Ferguson. We call it Mike Brown Town, when Mike Brown Jr. was murdered, and Mike Brown Sr. And his family had invited me to be the keynote speaker. And Mike Brown's family came to the Chairman Friends Street Party. Mike Brown.
Wow.
Some grand family, Jacob Blake, Breonna Taylor family. I mean, the Shaka King, the director of the movie Judas and Black Messiah. It was a powerhouse. So yeah, I spoke at the Ferguson. I was a keynote speaker for the 90th year anniversary of the murder of Mike Brown. So yeah, it's been nonstop.
Wow, wonderful. So, Chairman, listen, we got to talk because there's going to be a big rally in Mississippi. Remember, I was talking to you about the murder of the young brother in Mississippi, and they found his body parts. So there's
I'm familiar. We both, as a matter of fact, we had talked to the mother a while ago. We both been down there. Matter of fact, we try to connect Lee from. I think going to get. I think there's another case close Mississippi that. The other got killed by the Walmart. October 4th, we're gonna check on that case too. Yeah, but forgive me. Go ahead. What you were saying, Embers? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Breaking up.
Is that better? There's a big rally. October the 15th, I got to check the date, but his name is Rasheem Carter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, his body parts are found, or some of his body parts are found. But the family, they ain't giving the family no information at all. I mean, zero, right? So they're planning a big, they're planning a big rally in Mississippi. So, again, we're going to be working with that.
Is that day set in stone, what you just said?
You know what? I'm not sure, Tim. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to check. I'll get back to you tomorrow with the actual date.
Yeah, I know the 15th in Miami. Yeah, open for the Panthers anniversary. Yeah, check that date, because I know we're talking about getting up October 5th around for the other brother's name.
Right. I'm almost sure I know what you're talking about, because they was going to do it that day because that's the actual day that they was, that he was found. But because the other rally is happening on that day, they want to support that. They had already planned it. So they want to support it. So they changed theirs to, I think, the 15th.
Okay, we'll figure it out. Yeah. All right.
But I'll check that date. But I know they did change the date so that they could be supporting other ones. Right, that's correct, because they had already planned it. So they didn't want to, you know, do something on that same day. So they changed theirs, I think, to the 15th. So again, I'll check with Sister Crystal because they're coordinated, the New Black Panther Party from Texas. They're coordinating it or helping to coordinate it. So I'll check with her tomorrow to get the actual, you know, make sure I had the right date, and then I'll get that back to you. Okay.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
All right, my brother. I know you've had a long day, so I'm not going to hold you. Appreciate you always coming in and, you know, giving us the 411, giving us the update on what's going on. And I'm going to be heading there soon. I'm working on the date.
Okay, keep it posted. Yes, indeed.
Yes. Coming there soon. We're getting ready to do something major in Chicago. You know, Million Woman March is now the Million Woman World March movement. So we're getting ready to bring it. We're getting ready to bring it now.
Right on.
All right, now. All right, family, listen, we're going to close this session out. And again, we're talking with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. Got our update on his trip to France. And, I mean, he just been, you know, just gone all over the place doing the work that we know he's always doing. And certainly we need to support in whatever way we can. Chairman, let folks know your Wednesday program. Are you going to start that back up now?
Yeah, we just missed his last one because we was having an actual event, you know, for the 10th Street Party, but definitely. They can go to YouTube, Chairman Fred Jr., Chairman Fred Jr., subscribe on YouTube, the Freedom All, they go to Freedom All Radio. They can, FREEMALL Radio. It's every Wednesday. We'll be live on Instagram, also live on Facebook. The Fisher Chairman Fred Hunter Jr. That's Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Hosted by myself and also Robert Allen, a.k.a. the Lady of Rage.
All right. All right, family. Oh, and listen, let Lady Rage know I'd love to get her on because this is, of course, the 50-year anniversary of hip-hop. So we would love to get her on
go back and listen to the shows. Actually, you know, she been, it's been touch and go. She actually, you know, jump in when she can, but she... Last month and 2 months, she has been on with us because she's been on tour. There's been a lot of, I just said recently, just hearing when I was coming, I seen this, I think she was the Essence, she had performed, and I was just seen it, and she had these young sisters up there. They had the Afro Puffs on, they were dancing. You had the, and then Karis won. He had came to Chicago at DuSable Museum, and I said it was like a breath of fresh air just hearing, you know, just like you don't know what you miss, you don't know what you miss until it's gone, you know what I'm saying, like hearing it, just that, the music, you know, just, it was just like a breath of fresh air just hearing these artists as opposed to this slop hop that they serve us now, you know.
Right.
The breath of, I mean, this man is a time period. This man is stuff you take for granted, you know? Yeah.
No doubt. All right, my brother. Well, it's always good talking with you. So, hey, keep on doing what you're doing, and I certainly look forward to seeing you soon.
You as well. It was good to hear Janine Africa, y'all, so that's good. And their voice also, so we can keep us posted, keep y'all posted. Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, my brother, listen, stay safe.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
You know, keep on keeping on.
Right on.
I say. All right, family, listen, we're going to close this session out, and we just want you all to know that, hey, we're doing what we need to do. For those of you who are running back to tell Masa what we're talking about, I hope you got a good earful tonight, okay? Because we already noticed some of y'all doing that out. It's all good because we want that. Right. Move right along. Tomorrow, please tune in 7 o'clock. We'll be on Zoom. If you do not have the Zoom call-in number, you can just text us at 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802, or email us at nationalmwm@aol.com, and we'll hook you up with the Zoom link. I'm not sure if we're going to do it on blog, so you need to check in. If you really, this is going to be a powerful presentation, y'all. It's going to be with Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy, who, again, at 13 years of age, was, in fact, enslaved in Florida. As a juvenile, forced to work. He was brutalized, tortured, and took the archaeologists and so forth to the graves of young black males who were murdered tomorrow. 7 o'clock on Zoom. And it'll also be on Facebook. So, till next time, family, we thank you all again. Remember, Million Women World March is on the move. We have our first assembly in D.C. later in October. We're going to kick things off here in Philly, October 1st through the 8th. Next week, we will tell you about the Black Print, Agenda 25. Wait till you hear what our plans are for the next 3 to 5 years, because that's the way we've now designed our movement. This is not just a one-time event. It never was, really, but we're letting people know now. We have a very interesting, immediate, and protracted plan. And by the way, we're on the mission for 1 million members. We hope all of you will support that. You can be a 1 in a million member, a support member with just $1 to start with. Of course, from $1 to $1 million, it works. So again, be a 1 in a million member. Support member. Support a movement that is about self-determination. We're looking at purchasing various kinds of things to move these things forward. If you want more information, again, email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Cash App us if you'd like. Our Cash App handle is $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. We also have ads available of the National Black Unity Newspaper. Again, support this movement, family. We don't get grants and all of that stuff, okay? And again, our anniversary is coming up. So we're really asking folks to support our 26-year anniversary and the launching of our global movement worldwide. Again, you can get more information by texting us at 267-636-3802. The deadline for ads is September 25th. The National Black Unity Newspaper is hard copy and online. Again, your business card or your patron ad, meaning your signature ad, it all works. Again, if you want more information, email us at nationalmwm@aol.com or text us. Until next time, family, we will talk to you later. Stay in peace in your heart and in your mind, but you know what to do for the enemy. Kick their behind. Till next time, promote to the Shinda. Together, we shall win. And in our lifetime, talk to y'all later. Peace out.